jungle called London. That's very, very nice. Thank you.
So we can hand over to Maharaj for our evening. My suggestion is, if you have a notepad and pen, this is a good idea. I don't know whether this went out in the announcements, but if you have something to take notes on, then it's not just a pleasure for the ears, but it'll give you something to reflect on in many years to come. It's okay if you need to get up and do it, and it's necessary to do it now. But please lend your ears, lend your hearts, and if you can kindly welcome Maharaj by folding your palms and just welcoming him with your gratitude from your heart.
Thank you so much. I would like to, in the beginning, give you a little orientation about the journey which you can take in chanting, and then I will actually guide you on a journey, on such a journey, so that you can make the experience. I hope we can all touch eternity for a little while, and then I'm sure when we come back from that spiritual experience, we can discuss a few things. Maybe you have a few questions here or there. Maybe you wish to have a clarification on something. And then at the end we will conclude everything with a last kirtan. That's about the, let us see, the roadmap which we will do, which we will go. Think of chanting as using sacred sound. Sacred sound is very different from ordinary sound in that it can bring you in contact with the ultimate reality. I like to think of chanting with an analogy that is provided by something else that is sacred, the sacred architecture. When you enter a building which is built with principles of that, it's an ancient science of proportions and so on, then something happens with you as you do this. I know such a temple that is built according to these ancient Vastu principles of sacred architecture. It is on the bank of a lake, the Manasaganga lake, and after climbing the stairs up, you enter into a bigger room. Then you walk through the bigger room. it's a bigger hall, really a huge hall. It's very high. You have to be aware there are pigeons, and when you are making sound, the pigeons' digestive tracts become activated somehow. I don't know why that is so, and you might get some birds dropping, but no problem if you go peacefully through that first space. You can enter the second space. You need to cross a threshold out of marble. On that marble, so you go inside, and then there is a smaller hall, but it's still a hall. Then you move forward and you come to a third threshold, where you typically see someone engraved in the marble. It's a person who lies there in prostrations. His hands are like this over the head, and he points towards the final room, the third room, in which the altar with the form of the divine stands. So, steps, big hall, a smaller hall and then the smaller room in which you see a form of the divine. This is sacred architecture. It is repeated in many temples who are following these ancient principles of this type of architecture. In sacred sound, we have a similar situation. As we first of all make our approach to chanting, it's like climbing the staircase. I think Radhika Das has very nicely done this. He has brought us or invited us into the sacred space by chanting the Om and by asking us to let the past stay behind and be absolutely present in the now. It's like climbing the staircase. It's done in kirtans when we chant the invocatory mantras. Then you enter the hall. What is the hall? That's the first thing which happens when you chant. You are engaging the hall of your body. You may say, I'm not overweight, I'm not so spacious in the body. Well, it's a visible form of you. It's the most visible form of you, your physical body. You engage that in chanting by doing three things. You pronounce the sacred mantra, then you listen to the sacred mantra as it makes its way into the oral channel, pronouncing and listening. And then you avoid any type of distraction. You stay with that. You may know wherever you put your attention and your energy, there is a reality happens. For instance, if you put your attention and your energy into a relationship, soon there will be small little people running out of your home, your children. No, so placing the attention and the energy into the sacred sound vibration, to go into the first hall, your body. Sit down. Chant the mantra, listen to the mantra, and avoid distraction. That's the first level. But we want to enter deeper into the hall of sacred sound, into the temple of sacred sound. So we have to now go to the mind. The mind's function of what we do on the level of the mind is to be really mindful. What does it mean to be mindful? It means to be absolutely present to the sound. What this means is that you, for the time where you chant, the sound of the mantra becomes everything you engage with and you focus on. Everything else goes away. The past, even the future plans, you are absolutely present. And this will be... Then the mantra can do something with you. The mantra is sometimes also translated with the word upaya. Upaya means vehicle. It means something that transports you from point A to point B. It's like your hydrobus. I saw yesterday a hydrobus. You go into the bus, it's a double decker, and then maybe you start in a Harry Potter station, and then the bus starts to drive and it brings you to the enchanted castle where you can move out. So the mantra is similar. You go into one, you enter it by being totally present to it And then allow the mantra to pull you on or move you forward in the spiritual realm. There's one last room which you have to go through. It's the room of the heart. My dear everyone, when we speak in spiritual knowledge about the heart, we don't refer really to the mechanical pump, you know, that where you can do some heart surgery if the arterias are clogged and so on. When we speak in spiritual circles about the heart, we don't even mean the emotional heart, that place which the Italians touch when they say l'amore. You know, then they don't go here. Maybe sometimes, but not all. Most of the time they go amore. You know, it's not that we don't refer to that place that is the emotional heart. When we think, when we talk in spiritual circles about the heart, we refer to that place where there is a fine border between the material world and the timeless spiritual world, between the things that are perceptible to the material senses, to the things that are absolutely transcendent or beyond material perception. There's a fine border in the heart. And if you can entrust yourself to the mantra, you will cross that border and all of a sudden find yourself in the spiritual realm. Sometimes people ask, where is spirit, where is God, where is... And they look all over, they run from one seminar to the next, maybe from one temple to the next, or church, or spiritual retreat center to the next. But they forget the spiritual reality, where God, where eternity, the soul, etc. reside, is right there in the heart. And you have to have a means where you cross over from the material perception, that you know what you see and hear in this world, what you can think even in this world, where you cross over and move into that unlimited, blissful place that is described in the ancient scriptures as Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowing and full of bliss. So yeah, this is a little bit the journey. Think of it, the journey of sacred sound is the journey which you take when you go into a building of sacred architecture. There are three realms, three areas which you need to cross. The body, by engaging the body, You are fully involving the body, the mind. What do we do with the mind again? Mindful or being totally present? Thank you. Mindfulness means being totally present. What that means is, whenever your mind goes somewhere, you bring it back. I have a friend, a professor, and when we meet, we like to talk with each other, and we combine it with a walk where he brings his dog out. It's a beautiful, friendly dog. He likes me, and I begin to develop a great affection for him as well. And I've noted when we walk, the dog always runs here, runs there. He finds the smell of a deer and a fox and so on. And my friend has to always be alert, because it can run so quickly that if you're not bracing yourself, it just pulls you into the mud with your face in first. So this can happen with your mind also. who has seen in their lives that all of a sudden the mind is, and you think an aggressive thought, or most commonly, because we are in London, an envious thought, why is he doing, having so much success and I am so unsuccessful in life? Or I'm giving some very blunt examples. Huh? The mind can just take off and then pull you into the mud. Of what you do in doing kirtan is you patiently and gently, that's very important, never become annoyed with your mind or disappointed or frustrated, but gently pull it back and bring it into this space of the kirtan. And then the final thing is where you bring your heart to the practice. I would like to chant with you two mantras today, and then give you a guidance how to move from the hall of the body to the hall of the mind, and then go to the hall of the heart where you can meet the divinity. Is this a good idea?
Yes.
Let's talk practice now. Okay. And what tonality is it? B. Very good. B. I will chant it. One line at a time. I would like to say, let us sit down. We are already situated. Let us sit straight, please. It really helps tremendously if you just bring your shoulders up to the ears a little bit like this, and then roll them back. It will open the whole breathing volume. You will see you have so much volume, but very often it's closed up. So then, first please take help of the written words. Then if you're ready, close your eyes and chant. And finally, let us cross that little border in the heart where we chant with a devotional expression, no? Where we remember in the sacred architecture there was this little man who was engraved in the last threshold and who was paying his prostrated obeisances. So, when we approach divinity, at least in the heart, we should feel some devotion. Oh, please accept me. So let's start. Deep inhale. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 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 Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Through these three inner spaces. Let us focus first our attention on the body as we sit here in space. There is also a space in the body where our mind is, our thoughts. Let us try to say goodbye to thoughts of the past, the hurts, the anxieties, and also the joys of the past for a moment. And let us be present and then enter even deeper, the level of the spiritual heart, where we cross that little threshold, that border, like the little saint who is engraved in the marble threshold that leads to the divine. Let us express something with devotion, and let us do so through the mantra. Let us all chant one last time the mantra. Saint who walked through North India, and he came to a banyan tree, and he felt himself exhausted a little from walking, nothing special, just a little tired, and he lay down, put his cheek, left cheek I believe, on one of the roots of the banyan tree, and was just dozing off to sleep when a pious man came by. He was totally upset. He said, "How dare you? Your feet are pointing towards the temple. This is an indecent thing. It's offensive. Your dirty feet are pointing towards the Lord." The saint just woke up and he said, "I'm very sorry, but you just take my legs. I'm a little overcome by tiredness. And you just shift them so that they point in a direction where there is no God." So the man took the feet and left, right, forward, diagonal, east, west. But he couldn't find a place which is not pervaded by the presence of God. And this is what comes out in this mantra. This mantra is so absolutely non-sectarian, it's so absolutely open, it's so absolutely welcoming, it's so universal. It says, "I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Lord who is present everywhere, who pervades all space and all time." Therefore, we like to chant it in a gathering like this. But we want to go now a little bit deeper to an experience of what it means to enter the temple of sacred sound. This will be a little bit, it will be wonderful. I mean, I was looking forward to all, you know, since 3 days when I knew we would have this event here. I request you to find a comfortable sitting position. With comfortable, I mean, maybe you want to bring your spine a little bit more straight or just shift a little left and right. It is really good if you, it helps the stability of the body if you place your hands either like this, palms facing downwards, palms facing upward, and just you can just balance yourself that you are really straight and in balance. You might like to contract your belly a little bit towards the spine area. That will add stability to your posture, and then become aware of your feet. To do this, you might wiggle your toes a little bit. I hope that's proper English. Wiggle the toes, it sounds so funny. Yes. So become aware of your feet and relax. Move your awareness to your shins and the back, the calves, and relax. Your front thighs and the back of your thighs, and relax. Keep your upright position intact. Now go to your sitting bones, the muscles around them, and relax. Bring your awareness to the lower back, to the upper back, and relax. Bring your awareness to your chest and your belly and relax. your two shoulders and the arms, elbows, underarm and palms. Just relax. You can do much better on the shoulders. That's where we carry a lot of weight. So please again bring your attention to the shoulders and relax them a little bit deeper. Just think your elbows are sinking towards the floor, but in a relaxed way. Good. Back of your neck, please relax. Back of your head and top of your head. Relax. The forehead. Relax. The caves of your eye, where your eyeballs lie. Relax. Your facial muscles, cheeks and all. Relax. Inside of your mouth, your tongue, your jaws. Relax. Appreciate for a little moment how you are relaxed now. From toe to top of the head, from top of the head, back to the toes. Bring your attention now, please, your breath. Just watch your breath as it moves into your nostrils, to the olfactory sense, place where you smell fragrances. And down into your heart area. Observe the flow of the breath as it goes in and out. In and out. Whenever you breathe in, breathe into the area of the heart. You should feel some lightness if you do this. A deeper sense of relaxation and maybe a little twist of joy. Now bring your attention to the inside of the heart, the spiritual heart, where you are and where the divine is. And for a moment, think about the question, who am I? When everything that is not me is removed, who am I? When all these things, stories, narratives, ambitions, hopes and pains, when they are all removed, who am I in my essence? And from this place, we will now sing Kirtan. We have gone through the body by relaxing the body. We are focused on our breath, totally present to what is. And now we sing. We sing as an expression of devotion. Some of you might know the mantra. If you don't know it, absolutely no problem. We have projected it for all to see.
Krishna, Krishna,
Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Kirtan, we will strive for total absorption of our body, that means singing and hearing, the absorption of our mind, that means totally being present to the sound of the mantra, and we aim also for the absorption of our heart, that means we try to make a contact, a divine connection, and then we are deep please sing now.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Everyone, one more time, please. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And one very last time, Hare Krishna, Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
sitting for just a little while and just absorb the experience, or let the experience sink in a little by just being there, just being, no thinking, no effort, just being. Let us slowly come back to room awareness by taking just 3 deep inhales and exhales. Thank you very much. Please look at this flame. The flame is exposed to the breezes or passes of air, or passing air. Passing air is something else. The air which comes there, it will flicker. However, if I put it in a windstill area, a protected area, maybe, you know, like a cave or something, or here, like this lamp or lantern, we say, then the flame does not flicker any longer and becomes still. So in Kirtan, it's the same. Our mind will remain restless or will cling to its moods, the stuff which is going on inside, as long as we only chant from the level of the body, you know, just make music. But when we start to become present, when we go into the, let us say, the inner journey, we are absolutely present. That means also we bring the mind back like a little wayward dog, so to say, which went sniffing somewhere. When we bring it back, and then especially we bring it into the area of the heart, where we connect with that feeling of devotion, or if you like to be atheistic, a feeling of connectedness, no? Then the mind becomes very still. And do you know what happens when the mind is still? Oh, it becomes so energized. It makes a distance to that constant processing. And it just rejuvenates itself. And then you will get the strength to answer a very important question in your life. What's important and what is no longer important? Yes, this is the power of Kirtan. Sometimes people asked, is Kirtan different from just an ordinary meditation, a mindfulness or breath meditation, or all these forms of meditations? And the answer is, yes, it is categorically different, because in Kirtan you are contacting an energy which is outside of you, that is not self-produced, not imagined, not constructed by concepts. So it's just a pure spiritual energy that transforms you. This is the power of mantras which we sing in kirtan. It wouldn't be the same if we would just hum a melody. No. It's really the kirtan displays its irresistible and uplifting energy by the strength of the mantra, which spiritualizes, or you could say transforms or imbues, here comes a good English word, it imbues our mind with a spiritual energy, a spiritual force, and that makes all the difference, that this power of mantra. Yeah, we could talk more and more about kirtan, but the mystery of kirtan comes when you do kirtan. There's some things which you don't get when you just talk about them. You have to do it. But nevertheless, it's very good to have some guidance here. If you forget the finer details, it's not a problem. Just remember three things. Go from the body and the engagement of the body to the mind. Engage the mind, and then from there go into the devotional heart. You can do a body check. I don't know if this is a good English word for this, but do I sit properly? And more important, do I sing, or am I just spaced away here? Do the mind check. Am I present? And am I detached from my new English word, my stuff, my mental stuff. And then do a heart check. Is something going on? Do I enter into a connection, into what is called yoga, a union here? And then with these three types of checks, you can see if you are still thinking or if you are already doing kirtan. Kirtan is another zone, so to say. I want to thank you very much. It was great to exercise my English on you. And to express these things or share these things. One can go really very deep in the kirtan yoga. And maybe when we have another opportunity in the future, we can actually discuss more on chanting in connectedness, not in a divine connection. But I thought the journey starts with a step out of the house. So we need to first start with the body and enter the space and then continue. Thank you very much. Let me look on my schedule here. It's pretty straightforward. Yes, but we are totally and scandalously above the time here. I wanted to see, are there a few questions from you? Questions which you would like on what you have heard, or maybe questions on other related subjects which we did not address? Yes, I see one. And yes, please.
It's around when you said connected to the heart, and you said it's not like emotions, but it's the awareness of the spiritual realm, just the material.
Mm-hmm.
When sometimes with me, at least, I don't know, maybe others, when we first start the kirtan, it's quite slow, and some of the instruments are very not provoking, but they bring out something which you don't expect. You just get this emotion, that flood of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, is that good? And it also happens when you're outside of this kirtan, like in normal music, like normal opera singers or something, but then certain types of sounds, they really evoke a deep emotion.
Yes, yes.
But I'm not sure if these emotions are good or bad, or if it's encouraged in the kirtan, or if it's just to be accepted as something that sometimes happens.
Yes, not the music is the sugar coating for what is inside, and the music assists in it. Srila Prabhupada once said, kirtan is meditation made easy by the application of music. The music really can do a lot to our consciousness. So it is desired, and those who are playing instruments like harmonium, we also have the pleasure of a bass and the very nice violin. And those who play on flute also, they are encouraged to play these, to be like salt really in the vegetable. They are, salt is there, but when you eat a good vegetable preparation, you will not really talk, how did you like the salt today? You know, it's not so, it's there, but it is not prominently there. It's not covering the taste of the fresh vegetables. So the music in kirtan is there like salt. It is meant to evoke and bring out feelings, but not cover everything. No? It's not like the musical skills are so important in kirtan. It's they are just meant to be invisible there and just assisting, not taking the prominent position. Like in kirtan, you wouldn't all of a sudden have Jimmy Page playing an amazing Led Zeppelin solo, and you're shaken by the music. Jimmy Page would be encouraged to play softly and to carry the thing. Mm-hmm. I know Led Zeppelin. English, this is English music. For Germans, this is English music. Good. Anyone else? Yes? You introduced yourself, but I forgot your good name, please.
Londrell.
Londrell. Wonderful.
Thank you so much for your service and your offering. I want you to know, there's a certain energy that is cultivated in the midst of chanting. Where do we direct that energy or guide that energy to as it is being cultivated in some and nurturing? There's an overwhelming energetic feeling. I want to know where do we direct that energy or guide that energy to while chanting?
To ecstatic dancing. Ecstatic dancing, yes, this is... And it's very good the way you phrase your question. Something is generated from within, and that can be expressed. That is one of the ways, the outside. But see, if you dance without this inner bhava or inner development, it's just a physical exercise, and it won't be as effective for bringing you on the spiritual plane. But when you feel you wish to dance, you can dance quite graciously, maybe not where everyone else sits, but in towards the back, and that is there. Sometimes when you're more evolved, there are even gestures which the kirtan, the dancers make. A very common gesture is this one. You have... and the swaying of the body. But there's also some kirtans, I remember, you know, when Russia opened its borders, it was called as Glasnost and Pesteroika. I don't pronounce it very accurately. We were invited, I was invited with one group which we had formed. It was called the Gauranga Bhajan group, to perform in the Olympic Hall in Moscow. We had 33,000 visitors, and we did kirtan first. We were sitting down, but then we did also stand-up kirtans. And what happened then, I can never forget. So much energy came in the crowd that they came rushing like a tsunami wave of humanity, climbing on top of each other, you know, on the shoulder and so on, towards the stage where we from where we sang. And then they danced back, and they it was really in London you would say awesome, you know, in the true sense of the word, awe-inspiring to see what the kirtan did and how they were uplifted into dancing, which was a quite natural, spontaneous expression of the feelings that were generated in the heart. So in spiritual dancing, you first wait allow the feelings, it's called bhava in Sanskrit, appear, and then you express it. I believe it or not, I have a seminar called Spiritual Dancing. It's a lot wonderful to dance. I like to dance like anything. Even in my mature old age, I last most probably longer than these young people in dancing. Yeah. It is. We see when we do these, as we do this kirtan, which is a little bit, I think, like a workshop, it's very important to first start in this meditational way, because through the meditational way, you will see that something is happening and is arising and generated. But I can well imagine that in the future we will have dancing from the simple swaying, you know, like corn sways in the breeze coming from the ocean. You know? So in the same way, the spiritualist will sway by the breeze of bhava, it's called, the inner mood. Thank you very much. Yes. So we did not do this here because the most important thing is it should be sacred dance. It should not just be let's rock and roll, you know, or no one hears rock and roll any longer, but it should be carried by the spirit, this dance. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Good. I will now secretly look at the wristwatch. Let me just see where we are.
Is there one more? A final question. I can feel it in the room. Oh, there you go, Graham. Graham.
Graham. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Graham. Yes. Yes, Graham.
I've had the presence of God in my life for quite a long time, but Krishna is quite new to me. And I wondered if you could explain about your first deep experiences with Krishna through chanting and how that felt.
Yeah. Let me tell you, the very first time was when I was very young, and there is one English group, I don't know if the people talk about them any longer, Rolling Stones, maybe you have heard. And one of the members had died a tragic death. He had taken substances and then taken a bath in the night in a swimming pool and drowned. And was, I still remember there was a film about this. We saw his two dogs at the edge of the swimming pool wailing for their dead master. Oh. So there was a condolence or you know, a little celebration about the unexpected and tragic death, and those who were appreciating the group were also grief-stricken. I was one of them. I was very grief-stricken. I looked at the TV, and I remember the next, then the announcer said, there's an exciting new group, which is just so absolutely different. You will see them as we blend them in. And then there were temple devotees from the London temples singing the Hare Krishna record right after this tragic scene. And I remember I sang along, and as I was singing along, the first thing is I felt this grief which was gripping my heart and filling my heart with a sense of meaninglessness, no? The face of death. Often we are often asking ourselves, well, if everything goes, what is the meaning of everything? It's so, it doesn't make meaning, it doesn't make sense. So I felt first this empty feeling was leaving, and there was a fullness coming. I felt God really at that time as a fullness and a peace, because God is a big subject, no? It's many layers of realization. You can, most people's first encounter is they see just an overwhelming light, nothing more, but nothing less, an overwhelming light. Yeah, because there's a time factor. But you are interested, when did you see Krishna? Of course, Krishna, because that was a little later. I was in surgery, and I woke up in the midst of the surgery. And first I came out of the body, this is called an out-of-body experience. I looked at my body as there was surgery done on it. Then I moved into the waiting room to see if the monk I had requested to pray was really praying, or if he was sleeping, because he got up every morning at such an early time that I was thinking maybe he's tired. But so I went there, I moved. Doors, closed doors, were no barrier. Walls were no barrier. And then I came back to the body, to my body, and then something went wrong in the surgery. The surgeon, either the assistant or the main surgeon, I don't know, but they hit. They were talking about golf playing. I still remember. So maybe one was a little temperamental and wanted to show, do like this. All I remember is they cut one of the main blood vessels, and a fountain of blood came all of a sudden. It was splattering all over. And the whole thing, the whole surgery, everyone started to, oh my God. And they did the emergency things and the stitching and the everything. At that time, I was seeing this from above. I didn't feel pain, but anxiety. For what is going to happen with my life now? And at that time, I remembered I turned to the Supreme in His form as Krishna and said, I'm sorry. Not I'm sorry. I have a request. Please, whatever happens now, be just close to my side, that everything is moving according to plan. So then I received a communication. This is not your end. Don't worry. You still have something important to do. You will return to the body. You will now go in a little coma. You won't see anything, and when you wake up, you will be fully alive. It will take a little time to heal, but don't worry. And that communication I was really done. I saw in that how do we see? Not with these eyes, but I perceived. Krishna in that form, very similar to what you see in some of the illustrations. It's much more than a painter can paint, really. There's much more light and is somehow overwhelmingly ecstatic, really, the presence of God. Yeah. So I'm always aware of the time because I don't want to be known as a time criminal who breaks all
borders. We want to hear more, and I think there's a couple more questions in the room. Am I right? There's one at the back I saw. Who is it?
It's Nicholas.
Nicholas,
yeah.
Please.
Thank you so much for your teaching. I appreciate it. I just had a question. The world at the moment sees so much unprecedented change, and I wanted to know if you offer any advice on dealing with and navigating through all the uncertainty economically, technologically, environmentally, politically. We live in very uncertain times, and I wanted to know if you have any advice for us.
Yes. The quality of change is the one constant in this world which will always accompany us. Only we have the type of changes which we see now, we have not seen before, therefore we are surprised. But every second your body changes, you know, you cannot go back to the past minute. Even everything is in constant flux and in movement. Therefore, some spiritual teachings compare this world to a river that constantly, where constant change, you know, of the water and so takes place. But yes, this is surprising. But before that, also people got sick, and people divorced, people, so many things. But we were accustomed to this. And now, yes, it seems everything goes a bit faster or unprecedented. You know, there is no precedent for it. If I have any advice from the spiritual perspective, it is this one. It's now time for each one of us to connect with their essence. I mean their dharma, the way they are, their purpose, and so on. And to make decisions which are your own decisions so that you can live in peace with them. And whatever the world throws at you, you've made a decision that is yours. That, what I want to say, if you follow nowadays the masses or others without thinking, what do I think about it, everything will change, you know. And the perspectives will change, and what is right now may be wrong tomorrow, and so on. So you need to find your truth, really, your standpoint in all of this. And you need to decide it on your own so that you will have peace in your mind, that and you have the strength to navigate through the external changes, because you found your viewpoint and you can live with this. Have you ever done something because someone else did it and then it turned out to be wrong? And have you ever become frustrated because of this? Why did I not make up my own mind, and so on? I think all of us know this, no? The peace of mind, which is so important for health, for your energy, for certitude. Certitude is not the English word. Security, inner security. That comes only if you make a well-informed decision and then stay with it. I think that the quality of the times is that we have to find our own truth now, not the truth or not the life of someone else. Do you know that that there is only one place in this whole universe that only you can fill, and that's your place. All other places are already taken up by someone else, but there's only one place that can be taken up by you, and that's your place. So why live the life of someone else? That I think we have to ask. And to find one's own place is sometimes a process, no? It is not always so easy, but if you set out on this journey, I mean, if you're wanting to find that, you will find it, as opposed to not thinking about it, caring about it. As a spiritualist, I would like to give another thing. In these times, build a strong tree of life. What do I mean with the tree of life? Every human being should learn from the tree to have deep roots. This is his spiritual practice. Every human being should learn from the tree to have a sturdy trunk. That is our physical and emotional well-being, the way we stand in this life. And every human being should learn from the tree to contribute to others like the tree does with its large crown. And if you can establish yourself in life like a tree, a good tree, that is deeply rooted in spiritual practice, that takes care of your physical well-being, you know, do some exercise, eat the right thing, your emotional well-being, that have some goal in your life, something you live for, have good relationships, you know, and stop the chatter in the mind, the negative chatter that is so discouraging. You all know what this means. Oh, you're not good enough, you are not intelligent enough, not this and that enough. That must be stopped. And then finally do something to help others, some contribution to others. Then you have a good tree of life. I learned this from my grandfather. My grandfather was a very interesting personality. He was a Swedish person and very deeply rooted in spirituality. And when I was maybe 5 years old, or I don't remember, it could be also 7 years, he brought me into the garden and said, "Here, see this little tree, I've planted it when you were born. I'm giving this tree, the care of the tree now, in your hands. Water it nicely, nourish it nicely, because it can give you fruits, your fruits." So I still remember when I was a little young and interested in public life, one day my grandfather phones me and said, "Come immediately." Oh, I knew something was up. What's it about?" I said. "Come immediately." It was serious, so he was not going to tell me on the phone. So I came, and he just said, "Come with me." And he brought me to the tree, and there was my tree. I had forgotten to water it because I was so much interested in music, film, literature. I was always out. He said, "You have neglected what you were given, your tree. If you don't now take care of it, it will dry and you will never see the fruits." So I knew what to do. I did some gardening, I brought water, and I know for I think 2 weeks or so, 3 weeks, I was coming every day to see the tree. My grandfather had told me I should speak to the tree to help it through the crisis. And whenever I come now to the place, to the, I see my tree. It's very healthy after all these years. Maybe 60 years it's now already. It is. I mean, the tree is 68 years old. It was planted when I was born, but I took charge of it later. Now someone else takes, also it's so sturdy, it doesn't need so much care any longer. And it's so good. So you all have a tree of life. It's your body, it's your mind. It's what you can do, your contribution. It's also your spirit, and it's good to take care of it. Best is daily. It's a nice analogy, isn't it? Tree of life. We can immediately see this is, yeah, this and what it stands for. It immediately makes sense. Yes, 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 yes. Of course, spiritual well-being, physical and emotional well-being, and something like social well-being. You know, being connected with others and having a lively relationship. You could all imagine you're leaving this lecture with the tree in your arms. Your friend asks you, what did you bring from this? A tree of life. Oh, what's that? That's cool. You know, and then you can share. It's very beautiful.
We'll make this, whichever is the last question, make it a well-considered one. Pray deeply. Where is it coming from? Jonathan, is that you?
I guess like a lot of Westerners, from a spiritual perspective, I've been drawn to what some people call kind of like the path of wisdom.
What type of wisdom?
The path of wisdom.
The path of wisdom, yes.
Mm-hmm. Through chanting and through the community and what Radhika gives, I realized that there was it was a bit distorted. There needed to be more devotion, and I tried to cultivate that, but I'm still drawn to the wisdom and so forth. So there's a bit of confusion in my mind as to how those two things sit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll exchange the word devotion for love.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, how do love and wisdom work together?
Wonderful, Jonathan. Wonderful question. They have to be parallel and assisting each other. You cannot understand these things which are far beyond the human consciousness and the range. Like our divine origin, you can't understand this just through intellectual understanding, studying wisdom traditions, and so on. You have to develop or free what we call love in this world. And bring that also there. God cannot be understood without love, but if you do not assist your loving emotions with some wisdom, it might go wrong. It might be misplaced. It might be not giving the result. It is really said, Krishna, you can only understand through tattva and rasa. Tattva is this philosophical truth, And rasa is the experience of a mellow a taste, something like love. No, these two are important to make the connection. They are both assisting each other. My spiritual master would say, without philosophy of wisdom, your spirituality is just a sentiment. Sentiments come and go. But without the help of love, your philosophical explorations tend to be mental speculations, just dry and empty. So both need to be there in order to understand. Or understand, is that the right word? To come close is maybe a better. I hope I understood the core of your question and was addressing it. Is this all right? Is it good enough? Good, good, good. So both should be there. Not. Don't kick one out for the other. Both should be there. And of course, this development of rasa or devotional love, it happens really when enchanting, for instance, when you consciously go this, okay, the physical dimension is clear. I have to sing, I have to hear, I have to sit, and so on. Then comes the dimension of the mind. That is also quite easy. Okay, let me be absolutely present and let me avoid distracting thoughts. No? And now comes that that dimension where you cross really, I would say, a fine little dividing line between the material and the spiritual. And that is where you chant. I sometimes avoid the word devotion when someone doesn't really have a visceral experience of what that is. I would say with you chant with a sense of connectedness. Yeah. Connectedness no longer to this world. We are normally connected to the world, but to the divine. And that can be really assisted by reading wisdom texts where this realm, the divinity, is described, like the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God. Yesterday was the day when it was for the first time spoken, 5,000 something years ago. So you might read that, and then as you try to cross that threshold into the spiritual heart, you will remember, for instance, for certain texts that somehow grab your heart, and you just feel it's right, you know, because it's an experience that tells you that it's right, an experience that goes much further than your intellectual, or let us say, your musings or explorations which you can do with your thinking. Yes. It's not always easy, Jonathan, to explain what is so much beyond the consciousness and try to bring it into words, especially when the words are not the words of your mother tongue, you know. Pull from your whatever vocabulary something that is close to what you want to say. So you will see. Chant more and you will see. Good. So I thank you very much. Hari Bol.
So we want to offer our gratitude to Maharaj for his kind time, his presence, for being here. It's not always easy. Anyone that's been with us, Gaur Krishna, for example, Rav Govinda Nimai, it's been a packed schedule, and we still have a whole weekend to go with a retreat. And still, to give so much consciously and not just in a robotic, automatic way, it's quite... I see it as drawing from a divine inspiration as opposed to working on one's own strength. That's quite clear. If you don't believe me, try and do what Maharaj does. And notice you don't get Saturday, Sunday off. And it's not, late morning wake-ups and whatnot. It's early rising, late sleeping, and next day you have to go and give again. And it's clear that this is a person who we can really learn from. And so I want to impress upon you, if you like chanting, if you feel this is bringing some connection for you and God, if you feel this process is really touching the heart and you're seeing that by following the breadcrumbs, so to say, you're reaching something higher, then keep following the breadcrumbs and the assistance of people who are way, way, way further ahead. Everything you see before you here is a product of just trying my best in a humble way to follow those breadcrumbs. I mostly fail, but still, it's working. The process works. And it's, I think, for you also, no? Om, Graham, Hannah, Jonathan, Eva, the process is working, no? You seeing it's working in your life as well, Isha? It's working. And so, follow the breadcrumbs under good guidance is always a good idea. And without being too scandalous and doing a cheeky plug.
What? I just take the living name. Okay.
Two books I want to share with you. If you don't already have a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, where have you been? This is a book that you must have, and especially because yesterday was the auspicious.